Well, like, what do you pack for 2 weeks in Israel? What do you like? What did you, what is in your personal suitcase? Like, are you doing
that's
like,
so private?
Are you doing like a, in like a capsule where you're like, I planned everything love, to mix and match.
So this is so funny, like, that you call it a capsule. I just do things and often don't know what it's called. So I guess you call it a capsule.
And then you discover that you're incredibly on trend.
Oh my god, it happens all the time. I've got 3 favorite shorts because I like them and they don't give me the jelly roll. I got 4 shirts to interchange. They all work because I wear the same kind of color palette. I got a pair of sneakers for the exercise I'm going to try to do in the gym. I got some sweat socks. I got 2 pairs of pajamas. I got some travel
size. Do you
size.
Have like a cocktail dress or like a...
I have one little stretch dress I bought on a trip a little while ago that is like foldable. It's not supposed to be anything but a cheap dress, but it works great.
But it's good for travel.
It's and then, awesome. Like, that's all I got.
What are you going to wear? Well, are you doing like touristy stuff while you're there?
I bought some neots because it's an Israeli sandal and I'm going back to the homeland. Fantastic. So I'm going to wear those and I have a pair of sneakers to, you know, exercise in, and I'm bringing some water shoes because we're gonna go in the Dead Sea.
Oh my god! Mm-hmm. I can you please send me a picture of you?
I'm gonna send
shoes?
You so much. Well,
please,
maybe.
Please. All right. Are they lime green and black?
No, they're actually gray, and they're trying to pass like something okay, but they're dorkalicious.
I'm thinking of the water shoes of my childhood. And I really
I never
to wear them.
Owned a pair of water shoes. We didn't have things for those things.
Water shoes.
Well,
were
no
just
one bought them for
skin.
Me. We're like, no. I mean, everything was really, you know, I lived out in the wilderness. I kind of like hacked
it. Flushing Queens?
What? Shoot. You knew that. I can't lie about that. No, I mean, I just we didn't like I don't have names for things. We just did things and we like whatever. I don't know.
I feel like you're on the cusp of revealing something. Like, we would just take the pig out to the farmhouse.
No,
and we
because
just killed it.
I'm a Jew. Would you stop with the pig thing?
Okay, it was a turkey. Fine. We didn't have names for the
things
we killed.
No, I didn't have water shoes. I didn't have snacks that came in like wrappers. You just ate a. This is what I did after school, okay? I came home, I was hungry, I opened a can of creamed corn, I ate it. I didn't have gummy bears or snack bars, all right?
Oh, speaking of gummy bears,
yeah.
The sitter who has my kids right now, the kids were like, I love her so much after the last time she babysat. And I was like, that's awesome. And I was like, what did you like about her? And they were like, every time we're good, she gives us a gummy bear.
That is a smart babysitter.
And I was like, I had a half a second of like, oh. And then I was like,
no.
You know what?
Look, if you're gonna take if you're gonna take certain foods away from them for boycotting them, which we're gonna talk about, then you need to give them a gummy bear for good behavior.
100%.
You're listening to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Ronit.
And I'm Katie. Boycott. Is it a gendered term?
Girl caught?
Person caught.
Folk caught.
Folk caught. That's
people,
my favorite.
People caught.
People caught.
Human caught.
Boys, girls, non-conforming swirls caught. No, but really, we're talking about boycotts. We're talking about boycotts because Nestle recently paid Starbucks $7 billion for the exclusive rights to sell their coffees and teas in retailers worldwide.
Yep. They're joining forces.
This is a really big deal because Nestle is basically the devil.
Yeah, Nestle's gotten in trouble over the years for a lot of different things. I mean, where do we even begin?
Where do we begin?
Child labor, there's human trafficking, there's polluting water.
I think my personal favorite is when they told women in developing nations that their breast milk wasn't safe for their babies and sold them their Nestle formula.
Well, did they
formula.
Actually say it wasn't safe or did they just say this is just as good or better?
No, they said it's better and this is safer. It'll protect your babies from disease better if you use this formula. By the way, you also need to buy our bottled water to use this formula. They got these moms who had just had babies hooked on this formula.
Yes.
And it's not like hooked on formula, but at a certain point, your supply dries up, and then you are literally hooked on the formula.
Well, the other thing is a lot of
which they can't afford.
The women couldn't always read the instructions, which also included that you need to sterilize the equipment that you're making formula with. And water is already scarce in a lot of these developing countries, so then you had to use the very scant water to then make the formula when your body could have, in most cases, provided your baby with what you needed. And this issue is so old and goes back so long that it was one of the reports I did in college.
Nestle is terrible. Whenever they open a new water plant, they often soil the natural water sources in the areas nearby. So the people who live nearby no longer have access to clean water unless they buy it from Nestle.
I have an anecdote.
It's gross.
The small Pakistani community of Bati Dilwan, a former village counselor, says children are being sickened by filthy water. And it's because the bottled water maker, Nestle, has dug a deep well that deprives locals of potable water. So it's not only very dirty, but the water level sank from 100 to 300 to 400 feet. So they couldn't even get to the good water that they needed.
So hold all of that in your head right now, and then listen to this quote from Kevin Johnson, who's the Starbucks chief executive, who announced this magnificent partnership. Yeah. The Global Coffee Alliance will bring the Starbucks experience to the homes of millions around the world through the reach and reputation of Nestle. That's the reputation. Just FYI, like Starbucks, this is the reputation that
Yeah, it's interesting that they decided to do that. And I think part of the reason was that Starbucks's profits, is, especially with their tea, I won't name their companies, but some of their offshoot brands, aside from their coffee, have not performed as well.
Why don't you want to name
their brands? All right, well, Teavana, because I don't want to actually like, promote them,
is what
I meant. But Teavana, they had some storefronts and they closed them. They're just not doing quite as well. So this is a way for Starbucks to make some more money and to try to get some profits in countries other than the U.S., because I think some of their cafes in the U.S. have kind of fallen flat or decreased in profits. So they're trying to get into, Starbucks is trying to get into homes in China, abroad, and this is one way to do it by packaging with Nestle.
This just feels like such a stupid business move to me. Like, this is a word that I would not permit my children to say, but this
is stupid.
Like, Starbucks coming off the heels of your Philadelphia racism nightmare,
right,
which was completely bungled. Like, you didn't even do the recovery well, right? Like, I know people who work at Starbucks stores who were there for their, like, day of closure, for their, like,
racial healing. How did that go?
Okay, so what happened was the company sent store managers, and this is just from one person who told me this, so this isn't, you know, necessarily representative of everyone in the world, Starbucks day of healing experience, which is what I'm calling it. I don't think that's what they called it. But they sent managers, like, video clips and discussion points. And then they had...
So you're saying that the Starbucks stores that provided this training did not hire a professional bias trainer, racial bias trainer, to come in.
To be present.
They basically took their current staff, their current managers, gave them some info, some bullet points, and then had them distribute the information.
Yeah.
Okay. So just remember, there's bias in there, because whoever's delivering your information, there's implicit bias there. And if you have people who have never been exposed to this kind of information about racial bias, or who happen to be extremely white, or happen to perhaps not understand what the problem is with microaggressions or implicit bias.
The whole thing is the idea that you can send a nice guy some discussion points about racism and he's going to effectively teach an anti-bias training is like, stop, please. Stop. It's like, oh, he's nice. Give him the scalpel for the brain surgery.
I can just imagine.
It's delicate and complicated and difficult.
So this is what we got to do. We got to be nice to all people, blah, blah, blah. We got to treat people like they're equal, blah, blah, blah. Don't let anyone know you're racist, blah, blah, blah. Make sure you spend a little more time over here.
And at the end of the day, let anyone use the
withering
bathroom.
Look.
Let everyone use the bathroom. Like, I mean, and honestly, let everyone use the bathroom is a fine company policy to adopt. Like, please do just let everyone use the bathroom. But this coming after this whole Starbucks racism nightmare, partnering with Nestle next, it just is so disappointing because we live in Seattle. This is a hometown company to us.
Right. It's not just a multinational corporation for me because it is a local company. It's interesting for Starbucks to take this step to join with a company like Nestle, which is giant and has been around forever, but is also infamous for slavery and for trafficking. I mean, I think in their Fancy Feast, Nestle owns Fancy Feast cat food. I guess in some of their fishing systems, when they were getting their supplies of fish for Fancy Feast, there was complete slave labor
in Thailand. Tracked. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, in Thailand. And they source all of their cocoa from the Ivory Coast, where child slave labor is the norm.
And you don't buy Nestle products.
I don't buy Nestle products.
And your children know that you don't buy their chocolate.
My children, when we're at the grocery store checkout line, and there's like, you know, Kit Kats and whatever, my kids are like, oh, we can't have that chocolate. It's not fair trade. Or my kids will point to a chocolate and they'll be like, is that slave chocolate? And they'll be like, yes, it is slave chocolate.
And your kids are really young and they know this.
They're 4 and 6. Sometimes I have questions about my parenting because I don't know. But you know what? You got to raise conscious consumers, which brings us to this boycott.
Or girl caught.
Person caught.
Faux caught.
I went to Starbucks at least once a day, basically since my oldest son was born. And it was a company that I was proud to support. It is a company that has employed a lot of people that I love. It has put people that I love through school. It has provided health insurance for people that I love. for a lot of days when I had really young kids, it was the only like hot meal I would get that day. It was like a breakfast sandwich from Starbucks, right? I had a lot of loyalty and love for Starbucks. But ever since I heard about this merger with Nestle, I have not spent a dime at Starbucks. I have not spent a dime there. My kids have not spent a dime there. And while I have questions about the effectiveness of my like personal boycott, it is, for me, the only ethical choice I could make, knowing that they're partnering with Nestle. As consumers in a capitalist country, our dollars are in a lot of ways just as powerful as our votes, right? I mean, after Trump was elected in 2016, a lot of people started to boycott the entire Trump family business. It was really hard for me to let go of Trump wine. I mean, that was my go-to shower grout scrubber.
My Ivanka earrings and my Ivanka shoes are, you know, I had to just give them away because I was not going to wear them anymore and
You stopped going to Atlantic City, so there was really no place to wear them.
And you know what? Actually, the reason I became a vegetarian was because I could no longer buy Trump steak.
I know. Gosh, they were so unmarbled. They're so good, well done with a side of ketchup.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know.
What is happening? Yeah, no, we don't eat meat.
Okay, sorry. But seriously, there's a hashtag called hashtag grab your wallet. And if you search for this, there is a spreadsheet document that you can download that has every retailer that sells Trump merchandise, including Amazon, 6pm.com, Zappos, Nordstrom used to sell Ivanka Trump merchandise, but they dropped it. Woo-hoo!
Right, but then they said it was about a profit. It was profits, and it was not I think it was because they didn't want to, well, I hope that because they are a Seattle-based company that it was because they're kind of progressive. I could be wrong.
Well, I have some insider information here.
Oh.
I used to work at Nordstrom a few years ago. Mm. I once sold one of the Nordstrom brothers a gift for his wife. I can tell you from personal experience with him, he is definitely not a Trump fan.
That's awesome.
Like, even though we never talked about it, his choice of gift for his wife demonstrated to me that he has empathy and a feminist heart. So,
God, I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, no, but seriously, it's the whole idea of boycotting the Trumps, it feels really good, right? Because it's like, I didn't vote for you, I didn't want you in the White House, and now I'm going to hit you in the wallet. Because that seems to be the only place where you are vulnerable. Because mm-hmm. you clearly don't have a heart. You clearly don't have a spine mm-hmm. or a brain.
Conscience.
So let's get you where it's actually going to hurt, which is in your wallet.
Oh, that would make me so happy if all their profits just fell flat.
And they have been. Oh, yeah, they have been. But is it actually going to make any difference in terms of what the changes that we want to see in our country? I mean, is not buying Ivanka Trump merchandise or is not buying my coffee from Starbucks going to change anything?
Well, I know that, for example, we can maybe grab our wallet and make a change in our buying power and spread the word to our friends. But what scares me is that internationally, that may not have the same effect. So
Totally. That's
why companies do try to invest internationally, because we might have this upheaval here in this country and their profits might drop. But what about China? What about the Europe, people are going to continue to support those companies. So
yeah,
I don't know.
True.
So is it worth doing a boycott? And also, you and I were talking about, isn't boycotting in general sort of a privileged position
oh my
to
gosh.
Take, right?
Yes.
Because
you
and I have the choice. We're lucky enough to have the choice to decide, well, if we're not going to buy this product, we'll go over here and do it. First of all, some people don't live near independent brands, like independent roasters. But second of all, if I'm not going to buy a Nestle product, a chocolate bar, it's a lot more expensive to buy other chocolate in general. So you can go to the store and for a dollar or whatever those candy bars cost now, you can buy a treat if you're a kid.
Exactly. Think about like around Halloween. Not everybody can afford to buy your fair trade chocolate for the neighborhood or for your own kids on Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever. Like, it's very...
Hanukkah.
Yeah, I gave a shout out.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. It is a privileged thing to be able to like opt out of something on principles. So, for example, I am 100% for clean energy. I hate big oil. I do not have the privilege of being able to just buy a new car that is cleaner than the car that I have right now. I have a Subaru Outback, like everyone else in Seattle. But
so you're saying you're going to continue to use that car until it's like done, because that's actually also eco-friendly.
Exactly. I can't just opt out of that. I don't have the means to do that. Mm-hmm. And I also find this is another thing. When it comes to boycotts, is there a difference between consuming new products and then like rejecting products you already own? Because the story.
Oh, let's hear the story about this Keurig thing.
Sean Hannity. when Roy Moore was running in Alabama, Hannity was like, I think Roy Moore is a really good guy. He seems like he's for family values, and I want him to visit the Girl Scout troops. He didn't say that, but he could have.
And to visit the Girl Scouts. I'm just like a little delayed.
No, but he did endorse Roy Moore, and as a result, a lot of his sponsors actually dropped him, including Keurig. And so a bunch of Hannity heads, which is what I call them. I don't know what they're actually called. Hannities, like T-E-A-S-E, I don't know.
Hannitized?
A lot of Hannity fans started boycotting Keurig, which included them taking their own Keurig machines out of their homes and smashing them on social
media. That's so awesome that you now have no coffee and destroyed something.
Which is the funniest thing ever to me, because those machines are expensive. You just shot yourself in the foot, honestly, to make like this huge symbol that made no difference whatsoever. So hilarious. And then, of course, I have to flip that over and be like, am I hilarious? Am I hilarious
because,
to somebody?
Because you're not buying Nestle chocolate for your kids?
Because I'm not buying Nestle chocolate. Because I'm not buying Starbucks coffee. Because, you know.
Well, some of it can be a personal sense of taking a stand. I think that maybe is Starbucks going to miss you right now? Do they know that you're not buying your share? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not, right?
Yeah.
But you know that you're making a stand.
Well, I emailed them a few times.
I bet you emailed them just a few times.
I emailed them three times. Emailed them at the when I heard the news, and then I emailed them a week later, like, FYI, still haven't spent a dime. Then a couple months later, like, still off the Starbucks, please end this agreement.
Yep. But this is like what we talked about last week on our last episode. It's important to know that you can make a difference. It's important to know that, yes, maybe you can't take a giant chunk out of a giant problem in our country, but you can do something. You can make some decisions with your dollars. You can make some decisions with how you raise your family.
This is something I tell my kids a lot, which is like, you do you. Don't worry about everybody else. You just do you. And to me, I think a lot of the time with the boycotting, it's not going to be effective in terms of impacting systemic change a lot of the time. Sometimes it is effective. Mm-hmm. When Barilla Pasta came out against gayness, like it as a lifestyle, the community responded really swiftly, and now Barilla Pasta has one of the most LGBTQIA-friendly workplaces around. So, I mean, it can work, but it's more to me about saying, like, taking a personal stand and saying, I am not going to support you in this stance, and then communicating that to the company. Like, you're not losing my dollars because I didn't like your latest flavor of Frappuccino. You're losing my dollars
because of this deal you just
made. This is incredibly unethical and is antithetical to your values as a company.
I wonder, I'm so curious. I wish I had an inside look on what the conversations were at Starbucks, for example, when they decided to go with Nestle, and if anyone decided for them and said, you know, this is a bad move. I don't agree with this. I'm just curious about that.
There had to be some pushback. I have to believe that.
Hi, I'm Sarah Leibovitz, a producer at Large Media. Do you love listening to the hilarious and insightful tones of Katie and Ronit on the regular? Wish you had more podcasts to fill your commute the other 6 days of the week? Well, be sure to keep your eyes and ears open, because the Large Network is coming your way. Learn more at largmedia.com. And remember, when you want to go big, go large.
The Supreme Court recently upheld in a 5-4 decision that the state of Ohio can, in fact, purge voters from its rolls if they haven't voted in the last two elections and they don't respond to a written notice.
Right. So if you haven't voted, which, I mean, there may have been times...
In a six-year period.
There may have been times in my life where I didn't vote. But if you haven't voted in a six-year period and they sent you a notice and you haven't responded, you get purged off the voter roll. You no longer are eligible to vote in Ohio.
Which is kind of...
frustrating.
So I'm not a wonk and I'm not a pundit. So I am speaking to this from like the person who is an American citizen who has never had any reason before this point in my life to doubt the fact that once registered, I will remain that way.
Yes. And it's disproportionately, this is a big deal anyway, but purging a voter roll disproportionately affects people of color. And what, minorities? Poor?
Yeah, minorities, people of color, people who are living in poverty, who have to move a lot for whatever reason, people who are in kind of chaotic or unstable living conditions, the homeless. Many of the homeless are veterans, by the way. So this is people who have served your country who are no longer allowed to vote in its elections because you passed some kind of arbitrary or upheld some arbitrary, like, oh, 6 years is the cutoff. Oh, is 6 years the cutoff?
Wait, really? why would this be so significant in Ohio, and why would Republicans be pretty happy about this?
No, Ohio is a pretty solidly red state every time. Oh, no, wait, it's a battleground state.
And what's coming up? What's coming up? Something's coming up somewhere in the fall.
The solstice. No.
Nope, it's in the fall,
Mardi
and
Gras.
It's got no. mid in it. It's the midterms. So you know that Trump is doing a little happy farty dance right now. And I also want to say, Justice Samuel Alito wrote the majority opinion on this. This is a Supreme Court decision. This is the thing about law, right? I really appreciate law when it works in favor of what I believe in, but it really just drives me nuts when the intricacies of the law go against what I want. So
justice is not always right.
Right. So, the point that Justice Alito made was the court's job was not to decide whether Ohio's supplemental process is the ideal method for keeping its voting rolls up to date. The only question before them was whether it violated federal law, and it did not. So now you can purge those voters from the record.
Well, and let's take a quick look at the actual language in the National Voter Registration Act. Which specifies that voters can be purged from the rolls only if they ask, move, are convicted of a felony, become mentally incapacitated, or die. So maybe move? This falls under maybe move?
Maybe.
Or mentally incapacitated? Maybe?
You know what it is? What I don't like about it is it's a you lose it, you don't use it, you lose it. What is it? No. What am I thinking?
Use it or lose it.
So you don't use it, you lose it. Yeah, is what I tried to say.
Not like riding a bike is what we're saying.
No.
No. And so here's the thing that really bothers me about this.
Tell me.
That voting is not something that you have to earn as a citizen of the United States, right?
Yep.
Voting is something that you just get. This is core to our representative democracy, is that people can vote. Rich people, poor people, old people, young people, black people, white people, everything in between, we can all vote with a few exceptions, right?
Yeah, it's very scary.
Which I think deserve to be re-examined. I don't think felons should never be allowed to vote again.
They should be able to earn that right back to vote.
I totally
100%.
Agree.
Especially when so many people are imprisoned under false circumstances or, you know, later exonerated because they were actually not guilty.
Yes.
Well, so the Supreme Court got it wrong is what Chris Carson, who is the president of the League of Women Voters of the U.S., said. The decision will fuel the fire of voter suppression. No matter what the voters say, it's basically going to suppress voters. The other thing is Sotomayor, Justice Sotomayor said. She said the history of voter suppression against which the National Voter Registration Act was enacted and upholds a program that appears to further the very disenfranchisement. Disenfranchisement of minority and low-income voters that Congress set out to eradicate. So the whole point is to make sure people can vote no matter what their position in life, no matter what their income, no matter what their race. And this is actually going to target those people in particular. So I know that this is something Democrats are going to be railing against.
I certainly hope so. I mean, this to me is like, how is this not transparently gerrymandering 2.0? How is this not transparently racist? How is this not transparently partisan? I mean, when you're talking about the vast, vast majority of the voters who are going to be purged from these rolls are Democratic voters. And they're not going to be, like, notified. They're just going to show up on the day they vote. And their name is not going to be on there. And then it's like, well, I guess you can appeal. Great. How many people are going to do that? When you put that many obstacles in someone's way on when they're just trying to show up and punch a ticket.
Right. Well, so now not only are people going to have to, so not only will Democrats have to work extra hard, Democrats and progressives, to get the vote out there in Ohio. Yeah. Now there's going to have to be this, like, preemptive run out there, rally to get everyone. Are you sure you're registered? Are you sure? All this people power is going to have to be harnessed to make sure that people who think that they're actually registered are indeed registered before the election even comes.
Yep.
It's money, it's time, it's resources. It's crazy.
You were just joking about Donald Trump doing a happy fart dance, but I swear to God, I was just watching a bunch of BBC Planet Earth stuff, and you know how some animals will, like, do distractions where they'll, like, fart a big nasty smell over here so that they can escape? Like, that is what Donald Trump is doing constantly. This is like his stinky fart over here, so he's like, I'm just gonna run away with the midterms real quick, and we have to spend our time and energy and money confirming existing registration instead of actually getting more people registered or educating ourselves on the issue.
Yeah.
We're just running in circles. It's like, I wish this worked with Thanksgiving dinner, where like, if my uncle didn't show up 3 years in a row, he just stopped getting
invited. You're uninvited.
Thank you, finally, goodbye.
Like, you screwed it up.
But that's not how family works, and that is also not how our fucking republic works. So people should be able to stay registered.
So if you know anyone in Ohio, check with them. Tell them to check that they are still registered.
Any state. Okay. So when I said that men are trash, I did mean that, but I realized that it is possible that it needs to be made more specific and clear exactly what I meant when I said men are trash. I am not talking about one specific man here, one specific man over there. I'm talking, when I say men, I should be saying the patriarchy, and the people who uphold the patriarchy are trash. And the reason that I feel really, really strongly about this right now is because literally just 5 minutes ago, Ronit and I sat and read this entire Medium post by an actress and model named Chloe Dykstra, who you may or may not have ever heard of before. But in this post, she describes years of emotional and sexual abuse. And by the way, if that is going to be a difficult thing for you to hear about, we're going to be discussing it in this next segment. So you can just like fast forward about like 5-6 minutes, mm-hmm. and you should be good to go again.
Yep.
But Chloe Dykstra describes years of abuse.
Emotional abuse and manipulation.
From her boyfriend, who's unnamed in the article, but who it now appears to be Chris Hardwick, whom you might know from Nerdist or any of his other many, many projects.
Right.
And the reason that this one really, really hurts is that I think this is a guy who has really coasted on his harmlessness and his own identity as kind of an underdog guy. I'm a nerd guy.
Which is kind of, it's self-fashioned. It's not, I think the term nerd is so overplayed and outmoded at this point. It's mainstream. There's no nerd. Saying you're a nerd means you're a regular person these days.
Yeah, you're like, you care about something and know a lot about it.
It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. So to have I don't understand things that title themselves nerd, nerdist. Anyway, it's cornering the market for maybe the underdog a little bit. But the underdog became a super top dog, a CEO of a company, and had hands in lots of different projects and became really financially successful.
And really powerful, too. Mm-hmm. And is dating this woman, Chloe Dykstra, who describes, you know, he set immediate rules in their relationship. He, you know, she's not allowed to take pictures with him. She's not allowed to go out because he works during the day and he's home at night and she's expected to just be there for him.
Well, there is a 20-year age difference between the two of them and a power dynamic at play. Though in the beginning of the relationship, it seems like the power dynamic was less obvious because she dated him over the course of the time that he became super, super megawatt powerful. But all kinds of rules in the relationship that started out with don't talk about us in public, you know,
don't talk in public
because I'm well known, people will hear our conversations. Yes. She details anorexia that she suffered because of this. She details, and this is a very, very different turn that this story takes. After they broke up, after she left him, he blacklisted her. He got on the phone and called different places that she had projects cooking and asked her to no longer be employed. So he deeply affected her career. He deeply affected her self-esteem, her health. The things that she details, including an ectopic pregnancy where she received no support from him.
No, his first question after she underwent surgery for an ectopic pregnancy was, when can I have sex with her again?
When I first heard this story came out, which was recently, I thought, is it newsworthy? Do we need to cover it? We've heard so many of these statements. But then I read the story, and I felt that it was a very important statement from her because she was warning other people, especially women, about being in abusive relationships and how insidious it is. This person, you know, Chloe Dykstra was in love, infatuated, and that is all it really took for him to have power over her and to subjugate her. And it's interesting, too, to me because she is in a Hollywood family. Her father is a well-known Oscar-winning special effects man. And you would think, one would think, at least my assumption would be that she has some confidence, that she has some footing in Hollywood and doesn't need to feel insecure. Because a lot of times people who have supportive parents can feel like they have grounding and maybe not fall for this. But this goes to show me, and is part of the reason I wanted to cover this, is that even if you have someone who is powerful in your life and you have some background in the community where you live, you can still fall victim to someone's controlling abusive behavior.
Absolutely.
And it showed me also that you can't, she didn't do anything wrong. So if your instinct as a man or woman might be to say, well, that wouldn't happen to me, or that wouldn't happen to someone I care about.
Or takes two to tango.
You know, she didn't do anything wrong except feel strongly about someone who then made her even more, a victim. Yeah.
So there are so many different things going through my head right now, and I just want to kind of like put them out. So first of all, how is this guy any substantively different from the incel community that we have all hopefully agreed is extremely, extremely harmful, sexist, misogynistic, violently oppressive to women? His idea that she exists purely to serve him, that she exists to be like a recipient of his he's basically masturbating with her body,
right,
with sex. I mean, she describes essentially being forced to have sex with him every night against her will, whether she was feeling sick, whether she was tired, whether she wanted to or not.
His needs first.
His needs first, 100% the whole way. And then the other side of this is like every single instinct that we have as women for self-preservation is to minimize and to say like, well, this isn't that bad. You know, he really loves me. He spent the night with her in the hospital when she was undergoing surgery. Doesn't that mean he loves me? And I don't think it's really, really easy when you're in a situation like that to feel like this means I'm weak, or this means that I can trust my instincts that I love him and that he loves me, or that there's something wrong with me, that I need this person, or maybe this is the kind of treatment that I deserve. And all of those things work in his favor to keep her down and to keep her feeling powerless against him. And if I can speak to like everyone out there, you don't need to be controlled in your relationships. If you are not being respected, valued, and encouraged to be the person that you want to be in your life, this relationship is not good
enough. Right, and if it doesn't feel right, your feelings are valid. If you have an uh-oh feeling, just like I tell my children, if you have an uh-oh feeling, then you need to honor that uh-oh feeling, and there's nothing wrong or crazy about you. I want to thank Chloe Dykstra for coming out with this piece and for being brave and sharing her story.
Yep.
It was not easy, I'm sure. I've got some lighter news because,
oh,
you know, in a world of boycotts, in a world of Trump, we need some lighter news. But
yes.
I have to say, I did notice as I was collecting and aggregating my lighter news to share today, I'm sad that this counts as lighter news.
Oh no.
These days.
Oh God.
Right? I mean, well, it's not that bad. But here's a piece of news that I am sorry to say is lighter, but it's good.
Okay, and
it's good news.
You should know that I don't know what's coming. Like this is gonna be fresh, totally cold responses
so,
from Katie on this. So
I have gun laws for you. I have some gun laws to share with you,
okay.
And I wanna congratulate New Jersey and the governor of New Jersey for New Jersey is just one of a handful of states, including Florida and Oregon, that have changed their gun laws following the Parkland shooting. So the states with the gun laws that are tighter are basically making these changes because of firearm-related deaths. So Governor Murphy of New Jersey said on the two-year anniversary, this was a couple of days ago, on the two-year anniversary of the Pulse shooting, our hearts are heavy thinking of the 49 lives tragically lost on that day, and he is signing into law some of the toughest gun laws in the nation in honor of all those lost in senseless gun violence. So thank you, New Jersey.
Thank you, New
thank
Jersey.
Thank you, Governor Murphy.
Yes.
It takes a lot of strength to do that. And of course, the NRA can come back with a lot of inflammatory rhetoric about how, oh no, these youngsters are going to be banned from having guns. This is not fair. We got to get out there ahead of this and make sure that everyone who is young and wants a gun can have a gun.
It is our constitutional right to give guns to toddlers.
In fact,
that is true.
The NRA basically tweeted something or came out with a statement that said, swift action is needed to prevent young adults in Florida from being treated as second-class citizens when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms.
What about the right to stay alive?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm so happy to hear that New Jersey, which is, in my opinion, New Jersey is like a real state. I mean, I don't know about you. Do you feel like it's a real state?
Yeah.
Oh, no?
It's not something that I ever had a question
about. What? Florida does
not
seem like,
state?
I mean,
oh,
you know, when you're
I
from
see,
certain
see,
places,
see,
people kind of laugh about it. Like, people laugh about certain states. And
see?
So what I'm saying is if California signed something into law like that, we would all be like, whoa, or New York. It's this
no,
heavy
true.
hitter. to me, New Jersey, East Coast heavy hitter. Here's another good piece of news from the east side of the country.
Sweet.
You ready?
Ready.
This is really good.
Awesome.
So Maine has now agreed to adopt, starting in 2019.
Lobsters.
Yes. They're going to stop eating lobsters.
No.
They are going to adopt them and raise them. Yep. They're going to have clothing drives for the lobsters. No, basically what's happening is legislation to include gender X for non-binary people on their driver's license is now coming into effect. So, and this actually, the nice story about this is, so this person whose name has four parts to it, and I'm going to read them now,
okay, great.
Is Ian Meredith Dane Lindsay, said that they have been growing up their whole lives being made fun of and being polarized because of having non-clear gender identity. So the quote from this person was, having the sticker on my driver's license as a gender designation of X validates my existence. It was extremely important for me and for non-binary individuals in general. It shows that we're human beings worthy of being recognized. Because when you don't have a gender appearance in keeping with what maybe your license says, you're a victim of profiling. You can be, there's abuse. I think at the airport, Ian Meredith was taken aside and patted down in a really demoralizing way.
Yep.
So this kind of X assignment is not the first state. Maine is not the first state to do it. We also have Washington, D.C., which started doing it, and Oregon and California started doing it. And so now Maine is going to do it.
That's
awesome.
And what does that cost you, binary person? It costs you nothing. It costs you nothing.
Yeah,
you just
binary person.
Else. Like, that's what drives me crazy about the pushback on things like this. It's like, then what will we do? Like, you'll just recognize another human being's value.
You just heard Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory with Katie
and Ronit,
a Large Media production. That's L-A-R-J, Large. If you like this episode or want to follow up on anything we talked about, come find us at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory or tweet at me, bro. yeah, that's a good one. I'm at Mouthy Podcast on Twitter. Thanks for listening.